Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
All my bets were safe. There just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome into the latest Behind the Bets podcast. We are taping this on Christmas Eve. I hope everyone is enjoying their holidays with loved ones and using this podcast to aid your travels and delays, and hopefully we'll make some money for all those lovely gifts you're going to be purchasing. Okay, well, coming up, Matt Eumanns, again, phase two of the bowl picks. He was on last week, had a winner with Washington, did well with a couple others as well. It was the picks are escaping me, but, oh, San Diego State. And then John Murray as well, who I could not divulge last week on the pod because sometimes his lovely mother listens to the pod, but he did surprise her for Christmas week, so that was awesome of him. So both of that coming up, but thanks to everyone for their loyal listenership, and let's get to it.
Sounds to me like you guys a couple of bookies.
Well, that's what it sounded like last night on VSiN Radio as I joined Matt Eumanns, who's our next guest here on the podcast. And Matt, it certainly took us down memory lane. Late at night, you and I talking gambling, much like when we launched our radio show at midnight on KDON and had to post the podcast, and we didn't get to bed till like 3 or 4 those nights.
I love late night shows. I really do. I like Scott Van Pelt's Late Sports Center, and that's what we try to do on VSiN with our show, which is 10 to midnight Pacific time. And that's right in the wheelhouse, Doug. We started that, you and I started that radio show with Adam Hill. I think that was in 2010, the Las Vegas Sports Line, and we were ahead of our time. You know, we felt like there should have been sports betting content, more of it in the mainstream media at the time, and we ended up getting that show on ESPN Radio, and it kind of took off. But I love the late night spot because you can kind of recap, you know, the big events from that day, and then look ahead to the next day with the overnight betting numbers, and I think that's a perfect time for a show.
You're absolutely right. It's sort of the first sort of reaction. When the games end, you can talk about the bad beats. And be sort of, they call the Sports Center over in the old days when it was the overnight Sports Center that looped the show of record, I want to say, or show of something. Travis, do you know that? Show of record or something like that? Yeah, he's nodding. So, and it's sort of what it is. And then, I know you currently do a Sunday night show, sort of looking ahead to the next week after all those the NFL games are done that Sunday. You're right. And we're all night out. We're all watching the games anyway. Might as well just talk about them right after the games end because we're all firing and watching. But it was fun, man. It was fun to get on the airwaves. We'll hope to do it a lot more. Obviously, we do it here on the podcast. And this is wave two of the bowl season. And we've touched on tonight's Hawaii Bowl. But I want to get you, and you were big on Louisiana Tech as well, plus the points and a perceived lack of motivation for the Hurricanes. But the next wave is, you and I are both on the Trojans. You hear this phrase a lot, and I always think it gets abused, but I actually agree with it here. I think the wrong team's favored. Why is Iowa laying 2 here in San Diego?
Yeah, I always hesitate to say that because it usually comes back to bite you in the butt. I've been doing this in Vegas for a long time, and I would say about 90% of the time I hear a handicapper say the wrong team is favored, he ends up losing his pick. So you're not going to hear me say that when I analyze this game. But when I saw the bowl numbers open, I expected to see Pick'em or USC as a slight favorite in this game. Iowa being a 2-point favorite is a little bit surprising to me, but I think there's a bias, I guess, against the Pac-12, especially in the bowl season. When you look at the past 3 years in bowls, the Pac-12 was 4-17-1 against the spread, and I guess 1-9-1 is a favorite. I saw that number too. So the Pac-12 has not fared well in the postseason, no question about it. It's not like the Big Ten has set the world on fire either. But I guess the Big Ten's getting a little bit more respect in the betting market here. I mean, even if you look at the Westgate Superbook, they opened Ohio State as a 1-point favorite over Clemson, which really surprised me. You know, and you can say the wrong team was favored because now Clemson is a 2-point favorite in that game. We'll talk about that a little bit more. But I like USC here for a couple of reasons. We'll see if we get this right on Friday, but this is a Holiday Bowl in San Diego. I think the location advantage should favor the Trojans, you would think here. You know, it's going to kind of a fast track at Qualcomm. The weather should be pretty good from what I've checked out at this point. It's not going to be a warm night in San Diego necessarily, but I still think USC's speed and weapons on offense are going to give the Hawkeyes some problems. You know, I've watched almost every Iowa football game this season, and you're impressed by the defense, obviously. It's a typical Kirk Ferentz team. It's a blue-collar team, a tough defense. They win ugly, and that's fine. But in some games, you got to be able to come up with some offense, and I think USC is going to force Iowa out of its comfort zone. At least it should, and the Hawkeyes are not necessarily that good when they have to open up their offense. If you watch the Iowa-Nebraska game, that Nebraska team is not very good. Nathan Stanley passed for 99 yards, 11 for 24. He's got only 14 touchdowns on the season. Iowa allowed 24 points to the Cornhuskers in that game. If you watch USC-UCLA, Keaton Slovis passed for 515 yards and 4 touchdowns. And USC's got speed, they've got weapons, and I think they're going to give the Hawkeyes a little bit more than they can handle. At least that's what I hope is going to happen. Now, there is a chance that Iowa's a little bit too strong for USC on both lines. Maybe Iowa's offensive line, defensive line control this game. I don't think that's going to happen, but it could. If it does happen, I'm not going to be shocked. But I think I'm going to go with USC's speed and the fact they can do more offensively to give the Hawkeyes some problems here. And I think USC wins this game. It's not easy to back a lot of Pac-12 teams in the bowls. And when I look at the bets I'm making here and the plays I'm making, I have a lot of Pac-12 teams on the list. So I'm gonna have to hope the Pac-12 has a breakout year. And so far, so good, Doug, because I backed Washington in the Las Vegas Bowl, and I thought the Mountain West was weak, and Washington showed up with a blowout win of Boise State. So maybe that's a good sign for the Pac-12.
Yeah, you were all over that one and the under, so well done there. Got a little hairy in the last couple seconds there. You almost had a score and then a scoop and score. Fun
almost?
Time.
Are you kidding me? I was sweating bullets at the end of that game. When Washington scored on that run with about a little over two minutes ago, I was distraught at that point because what you needed was Washington to run into the line one more time to burn 40 more seconds of clock, and then you would have felt pretty good about it. Washington scored one play too soon, but got a little bit lucky there with a fumble, and it stayed under the total. But that game looked like it was going to be a dead under. You know,
yeah, no, you handicapped it well, and good job on right from the start. I jumped in on the Huskies. I was like, okay, this is a one-sided game. You can just tell right away. But I'm with you on the Trojans. Look, for all the Clay Helton criticism, and it's certainly justified, this is an offense that ranked 12th in the nation in offensive efficiency. Graham Harrell's returning after flirting with Texas, so that obviously bodes well. And Keaton Slovis just seemingly got better every game. I mean, he's a true freshman, but he literally seemingly got better every game. I think he had one hiccup, kind of an off game in there against Oregon. But aside from that, I mean, this offense is way too fast for Hawkeyes, and you can't be afraid to lose bets. I'm not going to be afraid to lose this one. I'll grab the points. I think USC is so much better at all the skill positions. I think they're going to be running wide open, these receivers. I think they're going to put up a million points. So,
you know, you brought up a point there that I wanted to make and I forgot about. Clay Helton coming back. I don't know many USC people who are enthused about that. And in the long term, it might not be a great thing. But I think as far as handicapping this bowl game, it should be a positive.
Yes, I agree.
Should give the Trojans a boost for this bowl. Clay Helton's going to be there. And Graham Harrell, too, because I really think he's this close to being a head coach. I'm surprised the USC was able to retain Graham Harrell. But those should be positives, really should be positives for USC in this game, too.
Yeah, I don't love Helton, but the players do. The administration likes him. And there's, to your point, there's no distractions and headlines about the coaching, confusion. Like, all that nonsense is kind of like a couple weeks old now. So I just think with Harrell back and everything and the players, it's just like a healthy situation for the bowl game. And I'm all on board for that one. So I'm with you there. Before that game, I'm on Wake small in this game against Sparty just because I've been trying to fade them all the time, all season. So I'm going to take the bait here. Obviously, Jamie Newman's status is important. But the Demon Deacons are tops in the nation in terms of plays per game, over 83 average. And I think ultimately that just kind of lends itself to tiring out this Sparty defense, and there'll be some vulnerability with the Wake offense. So I'm hoping the plus four gets there.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I mean, Michigan State's been one of the most disappointing teams in the nation this season, and the offense has been non-existent. And it just has – it's had the feel that Mark D'Antonio's on his last legs, you know, right, in East Lansing, and he's not going to last much longer. So I don't have a problem with taking the, you know, 4 points with Wake at this point. You and I talked about college football season win totals back in late August, and I remember talking about Michigan State, and I had higher expectations for this team and very disappointed in what Michigan State this year did this year or did not do this year. When I go back and look at some of the plays, and I had more losers and winners for sure, I was really disappointed. I played Iowa under 8. You know, we just talked about that game. And I cannot believe Iowa's a 9-3 football team. Won a lot of close games, ugly games, and just really didn't impress me on the offensive side of the football at all. I talked about Nathan Stanley with 14 touchdown passes for the entire season. Yeah, he lost two big-time tight ends last year in the NFL draft in the first round, and Noah Fant and T.J. Hockenson. And that's why I thought Iowa's offense was going to take a big step back. And it did, but they still, the Hawkeyes still found a way to win 9 games. I think it had more to do with maybe a schedule that's set up pretty well for Iowa. And also, you know, that 1-point win over Iowa State early in the season was a crusher if you bet that win total.
Yeah, the muff punt as well. I'm glad you brought the win total up because I wrote this in the chalk. I think it's important to mention. I was on Sparty over for season win totals, and I think I wrote that in the chalk. But, like, I punted early, and I got off that. But I just want to, like, over-communicate that I was definitely, like, not perfect on the Sparty team all year. In fact, I had the season win total over. I thought they'd run the table at home, and they didn't against Arizona State. I thought that was maybe the weather in that game. And then after that, I mean, this is an offense that ranks 100th in the nation in yards per play and 78th in offensive efficiency. So I'm going to grab the points. But let's go to Friday night. I think it's a fun game. I know you like Mike Leach. I like Mike Leach. You mentioned your Pac-12 sort of slant to all your games. Well, I'm fading the Cougars in this one because I think Air Force will not punt. I think there's a solid chance they do not punt. I'm going to go Air Force team total over 35. Now, I think there's a chance the Cougs win the game because of their passing attack, but I have to take the team total over against a Washington State defense that ranks triple digits in defensive efficiency.
Yeah, I didn't play this game. It's you know, it's the ultimate contrasting styles matchup, and I think in this case I would probably lean to the option team, which is therefore it's going to be tougher for the Washington State defense to adjust and stop that. You know, at the same time, Air Force didn't face any, you know, Hawaii is a pretty good passing team. Other than that, I don't think Air Force faced any prolific passing teams in the Mountain West Conference. So I'm not sure that they're going to be able to handle Washington State's air raid attack either. So that was a tough one for me to read. I guess I lean a little bit to Air Force, but I didn't really have a play in that game. You're probably right. I think it's going to be a high scoring game.
I mean, that Washington State offense is no joke. To your point, I'm not convinced Air Force is going to win the game, even though they're favored by 3. But I do like the team total. I want to isolate that. I mean, it's a bad rush defense, and we'll see. You're right, though. It's different in the flex bone and all that fun stuff. But okay, so that's my plays for Friday. Let's go to Saturday, and you're on the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. That's a very public play from you, humans.
Well, this is another win total I lost. I played Notre Dame under 9.5, and I chalked up, you know, 2 losses for the Irish before the season for sure. They were going to lose at Georgia. They were going to lose at Michigan. They, you know, played pretty well against Georgia. You know, that Bulldogs team was a little disappointing this season too, especially offensively. Georgia just allowed teams like Notre Dame to hang around too many times, and Jake Fromm didn't have the type of season I thought he was going to have. But Notre Dame lost those 2 games and swept the rest of the board and went 10-2. I was counting on the Irish, you know, slipping up at some point, whether it was home to Virginia, home to USC, home to Virginia Tech, maybe at Stanford. I thought they might get tripped up in one of those games, and it turns out that most of those teams I talked about were flops as well. Now, Virginia Tech had Notre Dame on the ropes. The Hokies should have won that game in South Bend as 17.5-point favorites. and they played not to lose in the second half of the fourth quarter. And when you do that, you lose. And Notre Dame finishes 10-2. But I will say that Ian Book had an outstanding season in Brian Kelly's offense. And I'm pretty sure he's going to come back for one more year. He should. This is a pretty strong quarterback draft, and I think he's better suited to stick around one more year in South Bend and come back for the 2021 draft. But he had 33 touchdown passes, six picks this year. He ran for 500-plus yards. And one thing I think Notre Dame's going to be able to do in this game is run the ball on the Cyclones. Tony Jones is an excellent back. Between Jones and Book, they can run the ball. They can put points on the board. Notre Dame, you know, against some, I'll say, mediocre to weak defense, has scored 38 points or more in each of its past four games. So Brian Kelly, after that, you know, miserable showing up at Michigan, really got Notre Dame to bounce back and play well down the stretch. And I'll play the Irish here. I have not bet this yet. I played Notre Dame minus 3.5 in all the bowl pools. I want to lay 3. I hate laying the hook and stuff like this. So I'll bet Notre Dame on the money line or lay 3 in this game. But I'm not afraid to play 3.5-point favorites in general because, you know, just like Washington was 3.5 over Boise State in the Las Vegas Bowl, a lot of times those 3.5-point favorites can be pretty strong. And you don't want to shy away from teams necessarily favored by 3.5 or 7.5. But I feel like a lot of times, maybe for peace of mind or whatever, that, you know, you can find a way to lay 3 or 7 or bet a cheap money line price if possible. But I like the Irish in this match, and I think that it's going to be a springboard to 2021 when Ian Book comes back, and Irish is going to be really good again next year.
That's so important, is the springboard component to a lot of these bowl games. You don't think like that for Notre Dame, but just all of them sort of. We talked about it with the San Diego State Central Michigan on the last podcast. Great handicapping, by the way. San Diego State last year getting shut out certainly brought the noise this year. But it is an important component to these teams that sort of had middling seasons or subpar by their standards or underachieving by their standards. I think that's a critical element to this. And it's funny you mentioned the 3.5. Bear and I have talked about it like two or three weeks ago. I'm just going to do the research. I got to find out how NFL teams do as a 2.5-point favorite and a 3.5-point favorite. Our guess is the dog covers 2.5 and the favorite covers 3.5.
I think if you do the research. I believe that's correct. And in fact, I was going to have Andy Isco, a longtime handicapper and good friend of yours here in Las Vegas, do some research on this because he's got a great database, and you guys do as well. But I've always felt like in handicapping the NFL, you want to stay far away from home favorites of less than 3. That number more often than not indicates a vulnerable favorite, and the public will look at it and say, "Oh, they just got to win by a field goal. That's a gimme," or you know, it's an easy play to make. Well, it's not an easy play to make. You're better off a lot of times playing home favorites of 3.5 than you are 2.5. And I'll give you a number that not a lot of people know, but Buffalo Bills burned this trend last week. Road dogs in the Westgate Super contest. Going into last week, road dogs getting exactly 6.5 points were 14-1 against the spread. And the Buffalo Bills were getting 6.5 last week at New England. Should have covered, but did not. But that's just, you know, you're talking about getting 2.5 or 6.5. You can't shy away from those teams.
I agree. And it's basically avoid taking the bait. That's what I feel like, it's a trap or bait, and you want to avoid that. So we'll see what transpires with that Notre Dame Virginia game, or excuse me, Iowa State game. But it's good to go a little sidetrack there because it is fun to think about it. And I've been talking about it for too many weeks, and I'm actually just going to get the research done. So I'll handle that. We touched on Clemson, Matt, in the last bowl. You and I are both on the Tigers here. Anything up to update that at all for you?
Not too much has changed. Obviously, it's you know, like I mentioned before, the Westgate opened Ohio State -1. I would like Clemson a little bit better in the dog role, but it's not like we're crossing key numbers here, and I don't think it's, you know, it's a big deal that Clemson's a 2-point favorite. I haven't seen Trevor Lawrence lose, and until I see him lose, and until I see Ohio State win one of these you know, big games, that team with Zeke Elliott and Joey Bosa, that was different. I mean, that's the best Big Ten team we've seen in the past 20 years. And that team dump-trucked Alabama. You know, this Ohio State team's really good, but I'm not sure it's the same as that team with Zeke Elliott and Urban Meyer. Here you've got Justin Fields, who's in the playoff, you know, for the first time. He's talented. He's had an incredible season. The guy, he accounted for 50 touchdowns with one interception. I don't care what schedule you play, that's amazing. And, you know, Ryan Day is here for the first time, and this he's proven to be, by the way, a great replacement for Urban Meyer. So I can't pick on Ohio State. I mean, there's nothing you can say really that is going to cheapen what the Buckeyes have done this year. But to me, it's all about Clemson. You know, a lot of people remember the one-point win over North Carolina when the Tigers were lucky to escape. Mac Brown had the guts to go for two. Well, I thought the Tigers were a little bit disinterested, maybe asleep at the wheel in the first month of the season. Since that North Carolina game, all they have done is destroy teams. And I like the fact that Dabo Sweeney's been here and done it so many times. Trevor Lawrence just doesn't lose. And until I see Ohio State upset Clemson, I'm not going to believe it's going to happen. So I'm going to play Clemson here as a slight favorite. And if I lose, so be it. But I believe in this Clemson team. I've got Clemson rated as number one team going into the playoff ahead of LSU.
Yeah, I'm with you. And if I lose, I won't be shocked. I mean, that's the other thing. If I lose, so be it. But I've been on Clemson all year. And obviously that North Carolina game was not that surprising in that we kind of expected a game like that. I just wasn't sure it was going to be the Tar Heels.
But, right.
You know, they played well, and Clemson would have made the playoff even if they lost the game. And they still would have been the 3 seed, even in that one loss over Oklahoma, I think. So
I do think you're getting a better defense here too, Doug. I mean, yeah. If you go back to that North Carolina game, those 21-20, Clemson has not allowed more than 17 points in any game since that. That was late September. Has not allowed more than 17 points in any game, and that was that 62-17 win over Virginia in the ACC title game.
I think it's going to be everyone's talking about Clemson, Ohio State from a few years ago. I actually feel it's going to be more like Clemson, Oklahoma from a few years ago. Not going to 31-0 shutout, but that game where Oklahoma had a couple fourth downs, it was competitive, and the coin flip plays did not go the Sooners' way, and then Clemson pulled away. It feels like that's going to be the game it's going to remind you of, unless we have an epic game. But I think that's going to be where it's just like one team was a little bit better when it mattered. And that's why I think the Tigers are the play.
Yeah, I don't think this is going to be a blowout. It's not going to be a repeat of what happened the last time these teams met in Arizona was 31-0. I could see this being like 31-24, 31-27. I like Clemson.
Right. All right, my friend. Well, we will get you back here on the podcast next week, but we will overlap sort of one play because I know we want to because of the way the kickoffs are early, is that Arizona State game and the Seminoles on New Year's Eve. You like ASU, which is one of those Pac-12 teams you like.
Yeah, this is the Sun Bowl, and I've actually been to the Sun Bowl. How many bowl games have you attended in person?
So, like, different bowl games or total? Like, I've been to the Rose Bowl a bunch because I grew up in L.A., obviously 15 minutes from the Rose Bowl. But does that count as one or, like, eight?
No, it counts as one. How many different bowl games have you been to?
Well, I've been to Las Vegas Bowl. Okay. And I've been to – Travis is holding up a zero. He hasn't gone to any.
Wow.
Travis, zero? Imagine that. I've gone to – I'm trying to think if I've been to any others. I don't think I have. Humans, how about you?
Travis is lucky that the host of this podcast is a very wealthy man and he could buy him a plane ticket out to the game.
Hey, Christmas. You never know what Santa's going to put under Travis's tree.
Yeah, the Las Vegas Bowl is the granddaddy of all pre-Christmas bowl games. So I've been to 8 bowl games. I've been to Las Vegas Bowl, Hawaii Bowl, Alamo Bowl, Cotton, Rose, Fiesta, Citrus, and Sun Bowl. And that brings us to the Sun Bowl. And if anybody listening to this goes to El Paso for this game, my advice would be don't go to Juarez after the game like I did. It's dangerous. Anyway,
no kidding.
I like Arizona State here as a 4-point favorite. And you have distractions, obviously, on the Florida State side. I think some of those will have calmed down. You know, the transition's obvious. They know who the coach is going to be. He's going to be at the game. He's not going to be coaching Memphis, and that probably helps. And Mike Norvell is going to be around. It's not a major thing to me that Florida State's got these distractions. It is a minor thing. And more than anything, I think Herm Edwards is a great motivator. You worked with him at ESPN. You know what the guy's all about. He's going to have his team jacked up to play in this game. I'm not sure the Seminoles are going to be fired up to be here, but I know the Sun Devils will. And Jaden Daniels, a freshman quarterback, played exceptionally well down the stretch. You know, you talked about the Arizona State win at Michigan State. He was huge in that game. And crunch time for a freshman quarterback. I played Arizona State as a 2-touchdown dog against Oregon late in the season, and the Sun Devils won that game. They followed that up with a rivalry win over Arizona. And I thought Herm Edwards had this team playing at a high level. I know he's going to have them excited for this game. And I'm not sure what we're going to get from Florida State. So there's enough there for me to play Arizona State as a 4-point favorite in El Paso.
Can't fault you at all on that one. I was very close to posting that on the ESPN.com chalk. Just because Herm, he had the cubicle next to me. I've told the story a lot. He's just going to have those guys ready to play. Motivation's not a concern. But I definitely will root that one in for you over the Seminoles. Matt, appreciate it. Great story time. Obviously, we can go on and on about our days at the Las Vegas Sports Line and all the edits we had to make on that podcast and the stuff on our website as well. But it set the table for our careers after that, and it's good to connect down the road, obviously, all these times on the pod. And it was fun to join you last night on live radio, late night in Vegas.
Hey, you bet. Happy holidays, and catch up with you soon, probably for some more bowl plays next week.
Yeah, we'll do phase three of the bowl bonanza, if you will. Be well.
Okay, thanks.
Kicking is for losers.
It sure is, and Twitter was blowing up with Bill Belichick making a decision, Murray. They're testing us. They're seeing if we would call out the Almighty One, which we will do and discuss on the NFL podcast. But, boy, there are some people chirping about that one. But Merry Christmas to you, sir. From Virginia, did the cross-country surprise trip of mom and taking time away from the fam to join us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, and I was at the MGM Grand Harbor last night pretty late. I'm not going to lie to you. It was a little crazy. I can't believe how busy that place is. Hopefully they'll have sports betting there soon.
Can't stay away from the casinos, I guess.
Yeah, the boys wanted to run to the casino, and we did. Probably not a great decision. I'm not going to lie to you, but it's the holidays, so it's fine.
How much sleep are we looking at here?
It's pretty good. I got a few hours of sleep when I got home. I'm fine.
Okay. Well, this is wave two of the bowl season podcast, if you will, and wanted to get your sort of perspective from behind the counter. We got the Hawaii Bowl, and it's a joke that'll never get old. It's an island game tonight, Murray.
It is, and it's one where we've seen sharp money on the side and total. We had early in the bowl season, we saw money come in over 62 in this game, and we're all the way up to 64.5 tonight. And then we saw a very respected group took two with Hawaii a few days ago. We went to one, and the numbers actually drifted back to two. Right now we're at BYU -2. So there's been some support for both sides in the Hawaii Bowl.
Yeah, I'm on the BYU team total over here just because I trust their offense to score. I think both are going to score, and I think both teams get over 30. But, I'm kind of leaning to the Cougs there, but that does concern me a little bit. You took some sharp money on Hawaii. Their upside of scoring is just off the charts. Sadly, I've watched a lot of Hawaii games this year, some of them on Facebook on my phone trying to fall asleep.
Why do you think that's sad? I'm not sure if I understand.
Well, I had to get up at 6 a.m. and 5:45 a.m. for the show. So,
you're worrying about my sleep schedule while I'm back home for a few days.
But I love it.
You don't worry about me. I'm worried about you getting enough rest.
Well, I get a nap in like a lazy boy. We have a wellness room. So after the show... So we're done at 10. I have to tape some stuff for .com. Like 10:30, I go try to get a nap in this lazy boy that I don't really fit in. It's like a meditation room, maybe. I don't know. Maybe a breastfeeding room.
I've been trying
room.
To get the Westgate to fund me like a situation under my desk, like a Costanza, little nap area.
Well, I don't have it under my desk, but I have fallen asleep in my cube before. I have kind of mastered that. I did it in Vegas. Sometimes we had some rough nights, and between shows, I'd lean back. And I get the feet on the desk and the reclining desk chair, fold the arms, and, I don't know. I just kind of got a talent. So I've done that here a couple times, but mostly the wellness room for like an hour, and then leading into kickoff, I'll go watch in the war room.
I need to get Conrad to come and install me a little nap area under my desk the way he did for George.
Sounds about pretty good right now. Okay, so
or con, whatever Jerry prefers.
So no Christmas Day action as well, and we go to December 26th. Got anything there? I mean, I would imagine people are trying to fade the Hurricanes.
You know, Louisiana Tech is a play that's seeing money from both the public and from sharp guys. They were taking 7 with Louisiana Tech. We're down to 6. Pretty one-way action, to tell you the truth. The public seems to be on that side as well. No one really looking to bet on Miami in that game.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's probably – well, first of all, Miami had a really bad year. But it's probably because the thought process would be they don't care about being in the Independence Bowl, which I also don't necessarily disagree with. It probably means more to Louisiana Tech in theory. They have a sort of a home bowl game. It's against a high-profile program in Miami. It's hard to believe the Hurricanes would really get up for that game.
I mean, that's sort of the obvious. I wondered if there was more to it. I mean, I just think be careful. These attractive underdogs can sometimes get blown out, like Marshall yesterday.
Yeah, I agree with you. And two, like, I'm choosing my words pretty carefully, saying probably, maybe. I have no idea if the Miami Hurricanes are motivated or not, man. I mean, it's all speculation from me. I don't know. For all I know, Georgia might be motivated to go out there and crush Baylor in the Sugar Bowl. You know, I keep hearing people saying they're not going to care. Well, that's all just speculative. Nobody really knows.
Gotcha. Okay, let's go to the other game on the day after Christmas. Pitt, Eastern Michigan, looks like double digits, 11.5. Total 49. We got Pat Narduzzi maybe kicking field goals here.
Pat Narduzzi, one of my favorite field goal kickers. I still think that was the funniest field goal of the year, Doug, was him kicking. Well, it was 10-3. They were down by a touchdown, and he kicked like a 17-yard field goal late in the fourth quarter. That was amazing. Other than that, nothing to really say about Pitt football, and very little to report on the Quick Lane Bowl. I can't really say we have anything from either the sharps or the public on that game. My guess is that Pitt will just be thrown into some moneyline parlays as a big favorite.
Yeah, that was pretty embarrassing by Narduzzi, but he stuck by it because he trusts his defense. Murray, you got to understand, he trusts his defense. So
he trusted his defense. I don't know that I trust his math skills too well, but I know he trusts his defense, and I respect that.
Oh God! As Bear said, it'd be better if they took a knee than kicked the field goal.
I don't disagree with that.
I agree. Yeah. Okay. The 27th, we go North Carolina, a team I've backed a lot this year. All looking back, not going to lay the 4.5 for me against Temple. A team that's been a little bit all over the place, although I guess a lot of teams are. What do you got there?
Yeah, it's mostly money on the favorite, but it's just kind of the typical betting you see on a favorite in any game. Really, none of these games, none of these Friday, December 27 games have seen a lot of action other than the Holiday Bowl. And we did see some sharp money in the Texas Bowl. We saw a sharp group laid 6 with Texas A&M. We went to 7. Right now we're back down to 6.5. But other than that, the action on December 27 is pretty quiet.
Okay, it is interesting, this whole Sparty-Wake thing. I'm on Wake. Maybe I'm going to eat my words just because maybe I'm pressing too much on fading Sparty, but I got to grab the points. I mean, Jamie Newman's status, what would you make? How are you guys tracking the Newman status with that game?
The same old way we track anything, just, you know, trying to stay on top of it on Twitter. The bowl season kind of reminds me of the NFL preseason in a way, where these are basically all exhibition games too, and you're just kind of always trying to stay ahead of the curve on who's sitting out, who's hurt, who's suspended, and you just have to lean on Twitter for that.
Right, and then we talked about it last time. You don't change the limits, but it's just a race for information. But let's say he's 100. They say he's stat. Like, is, I guess, how much of the unknown is baked into the line? Like, for example, sidebar, Clippers and Lakers tomorrow, 1.5, yeah. 2 with LeBron and AD, not 100% sure. What do you make the line once you find out that LeBron and AD are both playing? Does it come down to pick? Is it already assuming that?
I think the Lakers are going to be a small favorite in that game. I mean, that's something we've talked a lot about, is what we're going to make those Christmas Day numbers. But I think the Lakers are like short of a 2-point favorite, assuming LeBron and Anthony Davis both play. But you're absolutely right. When the guys are kind of questionable, you have that middle ground number. And we can talk about it on the NFL podcast, but the perfect example of it is NFL Week 17 look-ahead lines, where you go to this like middle ground number, because you don't know for sure if the game is going to mean something to one of the two teams. Like with the Ravens, we thought they'd probably beat the Browns and rest everybody in Week 17, but we didn't know that when we made the number last week, so we had to go to a middle ground number. And that's kind of what you do. You find a soft spot in between.
Makes sense. It's sort of like a hedge, if you will.
And
then you don't get beat up too badly, or you don't set yourself up for too bad of a middle. Okay, let's go to the 28th. A couple games that really are intriguing. I imagine the ticket count's going to be huge on Notre Dame. The over three, so 3.5 here against Iowa State.
Yeah, that's our most lopsided ticket count of the bowl season right now, is Notre Dame. It's like almost 8.5 to 1 on the Irish. Everybody's on that side. We're going to need Iowa State pretty big in that game. Those two appetizers on Saturday morning before the college football playoff, it looks like we're going to need both of the dogs pretty big, but especially Iowa State for sure.
Interesting. Any line movement you anticipate between now and kickoff?
I mean, you might see it go up a little bit because everybody's betting on Notre Dame, but as of now, I don't see any reason to move the number because most of the Notre Dame bets are going to be pushing two games later in the day on Saturday, specifically those two college football playoff games.
Okay, well, let's get to that in a second. First, Memphis-Penn State. I expect a shootout, but 59.5 does feel high.
An interesting game, really, the Cotton Bowl. You know, Memphis coach on his way to Tallahassee to take over at Florida State. I don't know how motivated Penn State's going to be playing Memphis, but the Cotton Bowl is one of the better bowl games. So it's mostly just speculation on how motivated these teams are going to be. We had opened this game 7.5, and we saw some sharp money take the points. They took 7.5. We got down to 6.5, and we've been pushed back up to 7. Very lopsided ticket count on this game. Everybody's on the favorite. We actually have our total up to 60.5 at the Westgate.
Ooh, interesting. Yeah, but the coaching carousel is always another fun layer for these bowls.
Yeah, and you don't know what the coaching staff is doing. It's all like anytime you have your coach leaving to take another job, but they still have the bowl game. It's just the whole thing is kind of weird, and it's hard to tell where their mindset's going to be. It's not just about the head coach; it's about the whole coaching staff.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. Let's get to the national semifinals game. So we're at 13.5. I'm surprised this isn't 14, all things considered, just given the suspension announcements and where the public
was. Well, we were at 14.
You were, I know, but still 14.
One of our more respected college football players came in several days ago, and he took Oklahoma plus 14, and we went back down to 13.5. So we were at 14 for a while there. I won't be surprised if we get back up to 14 because it's a very lopsided take account, everybody's betting LSU. But we were there, and we had a very respected player take the points, and that's what knocked us back down.
And what if you get another respected player on the favorite? What happens?
It would kind of depend on which guy we respect more. I mean, that does happen sometimes where two different groups that we respect are on opposite sides, and you'd have to just figure out which group you trust more, I guess.
And to play devil's advocate, given the volume that's going to be taken on this game, how any concern of a head fake being a guy who uses his respect as currency, bets the 13.5 so he can play 14 big everywhere else, all his outs, all his skins, everything else?
See, I don't think that's what this was, and I can tell you why, because at the time that he bet, we were one of the only 14s on the market. So there was no reason for him to do that. He could have gone and laid 13.5 anywhere he wanted to at that time. We were one of the only 14s, and he came in and took it from us.
But maybe the other way. Maybe, right, because you're saying why move you to 14 from to 13.5 when he could have just grabbed 13.5. But what about the
exactly.
Other way? When the market's 13.5, if they lay it to get you to 14, and then maybe they'll follow suit, and then he can get 14 everywhere else.
Yeah.
Interesting. Just pulling back the curtain a little bit. I think listeners would appreciate some of that. So I have no play there. I mean, if I had to, I would probably take LSU. But Jalen Hurts, for as often as he has looked shaky and all that, he has had some ridiculous performances, like the SEC championship a year ago and some other games where he's actually looked like a quarterback, a dual threat, an effective one. So
he has, and I still, I mean, obviously, I looked foolish for saying it in the SEC championship game, but I still don't think LSU is that good defensively. That LSU-Georgia game, kind of an outlier, because basically every skill position player on Georgia was taken off the field with an injury in that game, and they got down to a point where they didn't have anybody to throw the ball to. Oklahoma's got a lot of talent on offense, and I definitely think the Sooners are going to be able to move the ball against LSU.
There's only been one game in the college football playoff era where the underdog covered without winning the game, and that was the Oklahoma-Alabama game last year in the national semifinal. So maybe we see another performance where it just sneaks inside the number, one of those situations.
That's a great point, and I think you hit it on the head when you said sneaks inside the number, because Alabama was up 21-0 in that game. They took their foot off the gas, started looking ahead to the national championship game. I could see a very similar situation playing out in the Peach Bowl, where LSU gets out to a big lead, and they, I don't want to say they don't care anymore, but they're looking ahead to the national championship game, and maybe Oklahoma can get in the back door. 14 is a lot of points.
But I will say this. Last year's Oklahoma team had A, Kyler Murray, B, Alabama's kryptonite, if you will, was volume of plays. That's what Clemson had done. Tempo, and that's they had kind of won the game in the fourth quarter against Bama. That's not necessarily LSU's sort of script to beat them. If I were doing Oklahoma, I wouldn't run tempo at all. I would just pull like an NFL kind of thing and try to minimize the possessions.
Try to keep LSU's offense on the sideline.
Yeah, just one of those things. Because I don't think – it's just not the same. You don't have Kyler Murray. And where you just want volume of possessions and you have an – now, you're great. Look, that's just my theory. Now, you still have Lincoln Riley, and I trust what he's going to do more than my thought process. But that's what I would kind of do, kind of score at the end of the first half by methodically – if you have the ball with 6 minutes to go, try to do a six-minute drive and maybe start the second half of the ball. One of those kind of situations. Play clock, be very smart, and just kind of keep LSU off balance.
Think about how weird that is, though, that we're talking about LSU, and we're talking about how you need to keep their offense on the sideline and how their defense is kind of vulnerable.
My, how times have changed.
That's a very unusual conversation to be having about the LSU football team.
The other national semifinal game, much more competitive game expected. You have Clemson and Ohio State. This number obviously opened Buckeyes minus one. Now Clemson minus 2.5.
Well, here's the thing. A, everybody is hammering Clemson. But B, I can remember this game 3 years ago. Everybody was hammering Clemson even more. And Clemson obviously won that game 31-0. I'll give you guys a game we got absolutely crushed on. The national championship game that year when Clemson beat Alabama, we got killed in that game because everybody bet Clemson in that game too. So we've seen these spots where everybody bets Clemson and they're right and they win. I kind of agree with you, though. You know, Ohio State, they had such a great year. They really cruised through the Big Ten, which I thought was the second-best conference in America. And then they play one bad half of football against a good Wisconsin team, and everybody sort of writes them off.
I don't know. I've been suspect of their defense. Now, when we're splitting hairs, obviously I think they're awesome. I'm just saying when splitting hairs, they've given up a lot of points to Michigan. And just it's going to be a fascinating game. But I'm on the Tigers. Sounds like a lot of your patrons are as well.
Clemson's got better players at the skill positions than some of the teams in the NFL. I know that sounds like an exaggeration, but I don't think that it is. If you look at Ross and Etienne and T. Higgins and, of course, Trevor Lawrence, I think they've got a better collection of skill position players than some of the bad NFL teams do.
Do you have any significant liability on the futures market?
Well, yeah, we do. Oklahoma. We get crushed on Oklahoma, and we win a bundle on Clemson. We've been positioning it the whole time to win a bundle on Clemson because we knew they were going to be in the college football playoff, and we thought they would probably be favored when they got there. So they just had such an easy path to the college football playoff. We didn't want to get stuck with a big liability on them because we knew they were going to be there. We went huge on them. We take a big loss on Oklahoma. The other two teams, small winner, small loser, not a big decision.
Interesting. Okay, so anything – So you have nothing on the first responder. Now we're talking Monday the 30th here. And
yeah,
then
we have some money on a guy I do respect took the points with Louisville. That's the Music City Bowl Monday afternoon, +4 against Mississippi State. There has been some money that's come in on Florida, and you've seen that number move up a little bit in the Orange Bowl against Virginia. the other two games, the Red Box Bowl, the First Responder Bowl, really nothing to report as of right now. I mean, people are focused on the weekend. They're focused on those Saturday games. They'll wake up Monday morning and realize they want to bet the Monday games when we get to the Monday.
Yeah, I was all excited to bet Louisville in a bowl game, and then I found out they were playing Mississippi State in the line, and I was like, I don't know. I just think you know Louisville's going to come to play. You know they're not going to be resting or not excited to be there given how they finished last year. Obviously, a big bowl, getting bowl eligible was big this year. But
and I think I give a big coaching edge to Satterfield, Louisville there against Mississippi State. So I can see why the respected money took the points in that game.
Yeah, I was just hoping for a more advantageous matchup, a more pronounced mismatch.
I get it.
But
that's kind of a cool bowl to go to as well, the Music City Bowl in Nashville. Could be worse.
Absolutely. Well, my friend, I hope you recover from last night, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the week with your family. Really cool. What was the moment like surprising your mother?
It was good. I took an Uber from the airport, and I had the guy drop me off down the street, and I walked up, like, kind of up the side. So I didn't want her to hear the car pull up, you know? And, she was very surprised. So she was very happy about it. And then we got the whole family coming over for dinner tonight. And then, obviously, Christmas Day, we got a few things lined up. But I'm back in Las Vegas on Thursday morning, man. I got meetings on Thursday afternoon. It's football season, Doug.
Yeah, and you have an NFL podcast to tape on Thursday as well.
A podcast to tape. And really, this is a big weekend. Seriously, you've got the college football playoff, obviously. And then you've got Week 17. Sunday night, we'll be getting up all the wild card numbers for the week after. And the Super Contest, the Super Contest wraps up this weekend, and we'll announce the winners early next week. This is a really big stretch for us at the Superbook, so get home for a few days, but I got to get right back to work.
Good for you, All-American son that you are. Merry Christmas to you and your family, and we'll talk to you on Thursday, my friend.
Merry Christmas to you and Travis, Doug.
Money won is twice as sweet as money earned.
Especially around the holidays, Travis, when you have to buy gifts for everyone, and hopefully the bowl season can make it a free Christmas. Thanks to John Murray. Thanks to Matt Eumanns. We are going to be doing a next podcast on Monday going into the New Year's Eve and Day Bowls. So we're trying to break it up in what logical sense and obviously work around the holidays. But thanks to everyone for listening. Hopefully this amused you and entertained you and became a profitable podcast during their travels and listening on this busy week with family. So happy holidays to everyone. Merry Christmas to those who celebrate. And we'll connect with you Thursday for the NFL podcast.